In 1671, the Massachusetts Bay Colony had a devil of a problem on their hands, quite literally. That was the year that the village of Groton experienced something, well, odd. Groton was, like a lot of the first settlements in New England, a Puritan town. It was strict and oppressive if you weren't a religious white man. Women worked horrible hours, taking care of everything from cooking to childcare to home repairs. They were often illiterate and treated more like possessions than a partner or an equal. In contrast, the local preacher was a man named Samuel Willard. He was young, Harvard-educated, well-off, and free to experience life. As a Puritan, though, he was known for his fiery sermons and a hard-line stance on witchcraft and devil worship. In fact, when Salem erupted in hysteria 2 decades later, it was Willard who traveled there to help the community through preaching. In October of 1671, the day before Halloween, in fact, the Willards' household servant, a young woman named Elizabeth Knapp, began to complain about aches and pains. She felt pressure around her neck, as if she were being strangled. She suffered seizures, outbursts of screaming, and fits of deep sadness. And she saw things, too. She said there were people walking around the room, except there weren't. On another occasion, she said there was a man floating above her bed. Now, these might sound like odd things to report, but one of the common beliefs of the time was that witches, men and women who practiced the dark arts, could bilocate themselves, literally be in two places at once. So Elizabeth's real accusation was that someone in Groton was a witch. On the first Sabbath of her illness, Elizabeth's symptoms got worse, and all the while, Samuel Willard took notes, observed her with an open mind, and asked questions when he was able. Once, she fell on the floor so violently that she nearly rolled into the fireplace. Or maybe the spirit inside her tried to throw her in. It was hard to say at the time. She would shout out, too, words that were sometimes unintelligible and broken. Willard said they were almost like the voices of another person, projected out of the young woman's mouth. And sometimes they could be heard when her mouth was closed. When they could be understood, Willard reported that she would scream the phrase, money, sin, and misery, over and over again. On November 2nd, just 3 days after the events began, Willard started to get answers out of Elizabeth. She told the minister that she'd been meeting with the devil for over 3 years and that he'd asked her to sign a book. It was full of what she called blood covenants and had been signed by dozens, perhaps hundreds, of other people already. And her mission was to destroy men like Samuel Willard. Her confessions came in bits and pieces over the next few days, but as they did, her seizures and fits increased with them. She spoke of a man in a black robe and of sealing her pact with the devil in her own bed. She contorted and sometimes needed to be held down by 3 or 4 or even 5 grown men. And Willard watched, taking notes and studying the young woman's condition. Then, on November 28th, roughly a month after things began, Elizabeth had the biggest seizure of all, one that lasted over 48 hours, before collapsing into a catatonic state. For 10 days, she lay silent and unmoving. No fits, no screams, no dark confessions. And then, on December 8th, she awoke. Willard recorded more of the same for another month, and as far as the records tell us, Elizabeth never improved. But on January 15th of 1672, Willard did make some observations, hinting that things had finally come to an end. It was his conclusion that her condition was no act, no trick or performance designed to fool him. It was real and powerful. He also concluded that the symptoms were nothing short of diabolical, originating from dark forces. Even the voices were rooted in the devil's influence. But with all of that said, Willard refused to admit that Elizabeth had willingly brought it upon herself with a pact with the devil. There were too many holes, too many inconsistencies, which meant, in 17th century language, that she was a victim, not a criminal. Elizabeth pops up on the public record one final time. 2 years later, at the age of 19, she married a man named, and I'm not making this up, Samuel Scripture. And then she disappeared. I don't see a possession story here, though. And most historians don't either. Because when you take in the social climate of the times, the real story can be seen just beneath the surface, like the hint of a mattress beneath a thick sheet. Let me peel it back for you. In Puritan New England, you only stood out if you bucked the system. We only know about Elizabeth today because she broke through the barriers around her and left a mark on her community. She was a young, illiterate servant girl working in the house of an educated, wealthy, socially powerful man. And she took control. She claimed her own voice. She became the center of conversation in an age when women were ignored and socially oppressed. She was noticed. Even if it only lasted for less than 3 months, Elizabeth Knapp became someone. She became powerful. And then she disappeared. And that's the truly sad part, isn't it? Because it hints at submission. That yes, she did try to speak out briefly, but in the end, she gave up and closed her mouth. She married the male servant of the family next door and assumed her place in society once again. If we're going to remember Elizabeth at all, let's remember her full of a new voice and a new spirit. She was a bold, nasty, powerful woman, for a while, at least. Maybe she really was possessed after all, but it was no demon that took hold of her. No, Elizabeth Knapp, I think, was possessed, if only for a little while, by her true self. Something I hope we can all aspire to someday.